T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Blake Topmeyer is the SEC columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. You can follow him on Twitter on X at @BTopmeyer. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week wherever you get your podcasts. Blake, what's the TV setup in Casa de Topmeyer?
I got 4 TVs.
Attaboy,
going.
Me too.
Now, the fourth one, I'm kind of sad to say, is only a 24-incher.
They make those still?
I don't know if they make them still.
Is that a college holdover?
It is a holdover, okay. Yeah. It's about, it might be going on about 20 years old at this point. So, yeah, that's TV 4.
Is the 24-incher heavier than the other TVs? Because that's one of my favorite things to think about, like old TVs. Like, you pick it up, and you're like, God, this thing is heavy.
No, it's not the old box TV, but funny story about that. So, it's probably not what you called, but we'll digress. What's it been now? About 8 years ago when I moved from Columbia,
yep,
to Knoxville, I still had one of the old big box TVs, and you can't get rid of them. Like, no,
no
one will.
You just got to leave them on the street.
I was trying to get rid of it anywhere, and so finally I put it on Facebook Marketplace for someone to get for free, and so somebody playing their video games that needed, like, the hookups to a box TV came and took it off my hands for free. So I'm like, thank God someone came and got this thing. You can't get rid of box TVs.
Yeah, it's like that, and I feel like, when I got married, like, just trying to get rid of furniture, like, those are the two things. Like, literally, just please come take it. Like, we don't,
right?
We don't want it. All right, what's
No? You're almost willing to pay someone to take your furniture off your hands, right?
Just take it away from me. All right, we've had. I guess let's start with Kentucky. Are you entertaining the fact that John Calipari is not their coach next year?
I'll entertain it. I mean, I don't. It comes down to one thing, right? Like, does Kentucky want to fork over $33 billion to get rid of Cal? I mean, I think if you got that money sitting there, you entertain the thought. If you don't have that money sitting there, then it's a moot point and Cal's back next year. Like, I know there's the thought of, like, oh, who are you going to get? Who are you going to get? I mean, it's Kentucky basketball. I'm not saying you can get anybody you want. I don't know that Jay Wright necessarily is leaving the television studio to go coach Kentucky. He had a good job before. He didn't want to do it anymore. I don't know why he would suddenly want to do it just because.
I said the same thing to start the show.
Yeah, I think you can cross Jay Wright off the list. But I do think Kentucky could get someone good. They could get a top 20 coach and pair it with, you know, a top 10 program. So if you want something different and you got the $33 million, I'd entertain the idea. What I don't know is just how willing Kentucky would be to stroke the check. I mean, they've been a university in the past. That, you know, really on both sides of the aisle has not engaged in just this sort of runaway train in buyout situations. You know, I mean, you know, when we think back for a college football comparison, I think, like, we always knew that Texas A&M, they could engage in this type of thing. And, like, with Auburn, with Gus Malzahn, like, of course it was Auburn,
yes.
Right?
That, like, to me, like, those are the two perfect, like, well, like, whenever you throw out a buyout, it's like, yeah, no, those are emotional enough places that I can see them doing that.
Right. And Kentucky just historically has not been that place. And I also think college basketball is a little bit different. Like, you can have a great season and a single elimination nature of it. I think that's different than going, like, 5-7 in football and being like, okay, we have to make a change here. I mean, Kentucky had a good season, and then they lost the two games that really counted. You know, that's not much excuse to Kentucky fans, but you know, I do think there's a little bit of an argument to be made of, well, he won 26 games and whatever in the regular season. But, I mean, if you got the $33 million sitting there and finances aren't an issue, I would at least entertain the thought.
I think the problem is, it's not necessarily do I think that they could get a good coach. It's, you know, he does fill up the building. Like, there's kind of a business angle, too. And I just feel like with Kentucky, there's this sense of, like, well, anyone can do the job. We've seen there's plenty of people that can't do the job. Billy Gillespie couldn't do the job. And, like, I know, like, it kind of comes across as, like, well, can he do better? I think the biggest problem that I see with Cal is it feels like he's been the guy that has always had the right formula. And it feels like in this world, he doesn't have the formula.
I totally agree because, you know, the transfer situation happened. I mean, there was always transfers in college basketball, but it seemed like, I don't know if it was that Baylor title, maybe that was sort of the breakthrough where they're, you know, I don't know, maybe there's their whole starting five were transfers.
And even that most Gonzaga team, like, you know, Gonzaga was taking transfers too.
Right, and Cal's been the guy that just sort of sticks to this. I'm going to sign McDonald's All-Americans. I'm going to sign number one recruiting classes. I'm going to sign NBA lottery picks, and that's going to be my thing. And I still think there's something to be said for that. Like, you can get five-star recruits. You can get NBA lottery players. You don't turn up your nose at them. But, I mean, he really just has consistently kind of refused to play the transfer game, which Jimbo Fisher, again, for a football comparison, this was a guy who – was pretty steadfast in his refusal to play the transfer game. And, the thing is, like, I don't know that Cal has to totally overhaul it, but it's like, man, one or two transfer pieces could be really, really useful in these situations because we see it time and again. Like, college football is a sport where 9 times out of 10, the most talent is going to win.
Yeah.
College basketball in March, you know, it's not always that way. I always like the veteran teams going on deeper, like, you know, when I'm filling out my bracket, and I'm sure maybe you're the same way, like, I look for the teams that's like, oh, this guy's been in the tournament 3 times before. He knows what it's like. And it, I mean, Cal had some success with the one and dones, but as other teams have gotten older and they've played the transfer game and they load up with guys that have been in the tournament, you know, 3-4 times before, we've seen the scales kind of start to tilt in that way. I mean, you look at UConn. They got an NBA draft pick on the roster. I think, what, Castles is the last name, right? Stephon Castles or something like that.
Klingon's probably
the leading scorer on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have Klingon, too, who, you know.
Yeah, he's an NBA guy, yeah. But, yeah, their top players are not necessarily the NBA guys.
No, one of their top players, when UConn was still in the AAC, he's like, he saw a kid at East Carolina. He's like, man, I thought that kid was good. That's who he went and got. Newton.
Right. Right, and their point guard, Cam Spencer, he's from Rutgers,
yeah.
Right? He's a veteran from Rutgers. So, again, you see these other universities playing the transfer game. You can still sign the NBA talent, the five-star kids, but they've been a little bit more willing to supplement. And Cal's not done that. I mean, for all that he does well, and I do think he does a lot well, adjusting is not something that he does. Both in-game adjustments and adjusting, I think, to how he builds his roster, he's been pretty bullheaded in that. And he's got the contract to back him up. Like, if you don't like it, okay, it costs $33 million to get rid of him. But, you know, I do kind of wonder if there will be sort of a meeting in the middle here of, like, hey, change your philosophy a little bit. We'll keep you for another go at this, but something's got to change. But I don't know, when you got the contract and buyout behind you, you really don't have to change if you don't want to.
Well, it was interesting. It was almost like, you know, that Oscar Tshiebwe team that lost to St. Peter's. You know, he did kind of go transfer and get older, and then it was like as soon as that team got bounced in the first round, he's like, never again. I'm done doing that. And now it's almost like he kind of doubled down back on youth, and I just wonder, like, are we going to see like another pivot? But I don't know. Like, to me, I still believe, I think I would be surprised if he's not the coach next year. I could see it being a scorching hot seat, but I think I'd still be surprised.
I am too. I lean maybe like 65-35,
yeah,
or even 70-30,
yeah, right. Yeah.
that he's the coach, because I do think it matters that it's Kentucky. It's not, you know, as we've said, the football comparisons, it's not apples to apples, but the football comparisons, like, of course Auburn stroked the $21 million check to Gus Malzahn. Of course, you know, the oil tycoons at Texas A&M came together and stroked the $77 million check to Jimbo Fisher. Kentucky has not historically been that way, and it's a little hard for me to see, especially because Yeah, Cal's had a tough run. There's no denying it the last few years. But if you look at it holistically, the track record of his career, he's still a pretty good NCAA tournament coach. He's not maybe Rick Pitino good. His winning percentage, I believe, trails Tom Izzo. He's not Bill Self good, but he's pretty good. He's not been good the last 3 years. So I do think that they're probably going to land on, let's give it one more go. But that is not going to be satisfying at all to Big Blue Nation. I mean, that is a fan base right now that is just beside itself. And just they want to entertain no thought of Calipari. But you make a good point about, like, he still fills up the arena. Like, we've seen some of these places where, like, when coaches aren't living up to expectations, whether it be football or basketball, you see the hollowed out stadiums and arenas.
That's not
happening at Kentucky, and it's not going to happen. He could come back next year, and that place is still going to be full. I don't care what those fans say now. It is still going to be full. And so, you know, if you're on the fence about it, I think that kind of pushes you on the side of bringing back, in that, you know, the gymnasium is not going to be empty. It's going to be full if Cal's back again next year.
Little different topic, but I was kind of finding myself wondering this. With Greg Sankey kind of being the guy that's putting his name on the "we need to expand," it feels like, rather than operating in the shadows, he's kind of willing to say, like, you know, this is something that I want. If the SEC has a disappointing tournament, does that slow down any bit of his argument?
I think it should. Will it? I don't know, because he's the most powerful man in college sports. But I do think his power and his influence over the NCAA basketball tournament is much smaller than his influence over, you know, the college sports as a whole, and particularly the direction of college football, the college football playoff. I mean, there's no denying that what Sankey wants, Sankey gets in the college football world. In the college basketball world, I don't know that it's as strong. I mean, he's still a really, really important voice, but if the SEC lays an egg on the heels of his comments about how, you know, they're giving away bids with these auto bids to smaller conferences that need to be going to power conference teams.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, he's almost setting himself up for like a Saturday Night Live skit. Like, he says that, and then one of his best programs, I mean, his best blue blood and one of his best teams in this particular year, Kentucky, gets beat by one of those teams in Oakland that, if not for the auto bids, may never have been in this tournament. So, I mean, it really pushes back on his point. And I don't actually even believe that Greg Sankey believes what he's saying here. Like, this is a guy that cut his teeth in the SWAC or the Southland Conference. I mean, he cut his teeth as an administrator in the mid-majors. You know, he's from the Northeast. He's a basketball guy at his core. I mean, he's made his living in a football world, but Greg Sankey is a basketball guy. He actually played, I believe, some small college ball for a little bit, hoops, you know, not football. And he played high school hoops. Like, basketball is in his blood. And I think if you could just sit him down and chat with him and take the business hat off, I don't actually even believe that he has conviction in what he's saying, that you need to take away these auto bids and give it to the power conferences. Like, that's just him being a businessman and trying to protect the interest in the SEC. But I think on this, like, it's also like threaten the worst case scenario, put out those trial balloons to get what you really want, which could be a few more bids. They're not going to take away the auto bids, but you expand the tournament to 76 teams. So maybe you get a couple more bids for your league. But we see this so many times, you know, you threaten the absolute worst, when what you really want is somewhere in between. And I think that's probably something that could be tolerable to Greg Sankey and a couple other power conference commissioners, is, yeah, you let the smaller conferences retain their auto bids, but you bump up the tournament to 76 teams. And maybe smaller conferences get a couple of those extra at-large bids. Indiana State probably gets in if it's at 76 teams this year. But the majority of those extra bids, those extra at-large bids, are going to be gobbled up by the power conferences, so they get, you know, a higher percentage of the pie, but the other conferences still get their auto bids. I think that's probably the landing spot. I actually don't want to see that. I don't think we need a bigger tournament. I think 68 is a good number. It's just going to add more mediocrity.
Do we need to see more of Virginia? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was the Wednesday night. That's all I was thinking. Is like, I don't. Who needed this?
Yeah, and for most people, still, like, the tournament starts when it's the round of 64. Like, the diehards and the gambling degenerates, they're watching the play-in games. But I don't know. Like, I know a lot of people that love the tournament and are even college basketball fans. Like, they'll watch a lot of ball throughout the season. And maybe they'll catch a half of one of the play-in games. But, like, to a lot of people, the tournament starts on Thursday with the round of 64. And I do think there's some danger in tinkering with a good thing, because college sports is, or college basketball is not the NFL. Like, the NFL, you can do whatever you want, and people are going to watch that. You can expand the playoff to 24 teams. Nobody's going to care. They're going to watch every game in the playoff. College basketball is not that. Like, this is a niche sport that takes center stage for about 3 or 4 weeks every spring, because people love the tournament, but people don't love college basketball on the whole. You got your diehards.
Completely agree. They love the tournament.
They love the tournament. They do not love college basketball. And so there's this belief always that bigger is better. And a lot of times that's true. But I think when you have a product that people don't love the sport, they love the tournament, and you start tinkering around with the tournament too much, I think it's possible that you kind of over tinker with it, and you wake up one day and people don't like the tournament as much anymore, and you've ruined your cash cow. I'm not saying they're in grave danger of that, but I do think that they really ought to be careful with tinkering around with this too much, because it's not the NFL. People don't plan their lives around college basketball. They plan their lives around the tournament because they love it. But if you take away some of the things they love about the tournament, including auto bids for the mid-majors to see them be able to take down the Blue Bloods, I do think you're playing with fire a little bit there.
I feel like the only way that I'm okay with it, because, like, part of it is kind of making peace. Like, you read the tea leaves, like, okay, this is probably going to happen, so you might as well make peace with it. The way that I hope what they end up doing is get rid of the 16 play-in games. Like, let those guys go to the tournament. Like, I know everyone says, well, they get a chance to win a game. It's like, let them go to the bracket. Like, do that. And then if you're going to have the, 78 or whatever, 76 or 80 teams, have those all just be the last at-large teams and let them fight for it. Like, to me, like, that's the only way I feel like it works.
Yeah, I guess, every 11 seed or every 12 seed could become a play-in game. I do think, like, if you win your conference tournament, you should be protected from the play-in games.
Yeah.
And we don't have that right now in the 16 seeds. But, I don't like this. Like Duquesne yesterday, gets the upset in the 6-11 game. It's a great story. Their coach is retiring at the end of the season. They were protected from the play-in game because they won their conference tournament. And, had they not been protected from that, we could have seen them in a play-in game. But so I do kind of like that. Like, if you pull a Duquesne, you get your auto bid, you win your conference tournament, you're protected from that. If you want to add a few extra teams that are now the 9th and 10th best teams from the SEC fighting to get on that 12 line, again, I don't love it, but I agree with you. Something's going to change, and that's probably the most tolerable option. Throw a few extra at-large bids to determine, who's going to get on the 12 or 13 line. But make sure that those games are not involving teams that won their conference tournaments.
Talking with Blake Topmeyer, SEC columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at BTopmeyer. Ooh, boy, it's tough to imagine a better start for the Vols. Like, that was pretty damn impressive.
It was. Yeah, and people see St. Peter's and they wonder, like, oh, is this the old St. Peter's? No, totally, totally different team.
No.
And we have seen teams, like, on the 1 or 2 line, they roll through their opening round game, and you're like, oh, they are ready to make a run, and then they get in the second round game against a much better team, and they run into a wall. So I'm sort of taking it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but it is exactly, if you're a Tennessee fan, it's exactly what you wanted to see. I mean, not messing around at all. I don't dislike Tennessee because of what happened in the SEC tournament last week. We talked about that. Like, I have some of the same concerns I had before. But one of my concerns is just the draw. Like, I really like Creighton. I've liked them all year. They got three guys that can go for 20 plus. They got Kalkbrenner down low, 7'3" or whatever he is. Like, Tennessee, one of their weaknesses all year is, like, they don't have that super dependable big man. I mean, they got a couple guys that kind of come and go. They give them a little something, but they don't have a Kalkbrenner. They don't have a Zach Edey. And they also don't have the supporting cast that like, if that matchup happens in the Sweet 16 with Creighton, Kinect might go for 30, but you might have three guys from Creighton go for 22. in Shireman, Alexander, and Kalkbrenner. So, yeah, I'm not down on the Vols so much as I just don't love this draw for them. Again, they really don't want to go up against teams that got a good big man, and Creighton has that, and they got a variety of weapons. And then if you get past them to the Elite Eight and possibly have to play Purdue, I know everybody is a little hesitant with Purdue because of what happened last year. I get that. But this is a really good Purdue team still, and they got the big man, Edie, inside, and then they got a good barrage of three-point shooters on the perimeter. That would be a really tough matchup for Tennessee. And also, like, Tennessee wants to get out and run, and if they could establish that against Purdue, I think that could be tough on Edie. But if Purdue's more the one dictating the tempo and slowing things down and feeding the big man and getting Edie to the free throw line, that's not a game that Tennessee wants to be in. So, yeah, I guess I'm still kind of high on the Vols, but I just if I was a Tennessee fan, I would wish they were in a different region than having to go through the possibility of Creighton and Purdue.
Well, because it's funny that you mentioned that, because I'd made the point earlier. I was not even trying to diminish Tennessee, because, like, well, I thought they had honestly one of the most impressive performances. Like, the intensity, the focus, the way they came out, like, they took care of business, and they showed, hey, we are here, we're taking this seriously, and we're here to win this thing. But on the other flip side, you had Texas playing Colorado State in one of those games that, you know, we made fun of Virginia for scoring 14 points against Colorado State. Colorado State might have caught early onset Virginia basketball from UVA. They put up 11 in the first half, and it was a disgusting game, but Texas won. But Texas has also got some physical bigs, too. It's like, I'm always worried when you see that one team had as good of a performance as you could possibly have. The other team, it felt like grossly got their way through the game. Like, those are kind of those second-round matchups that scare me a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I'm kind of looking ahead to Creighton and Purdue, but when you look at the second-round matchups, like, Texas, again, is not necessarily the seven seed that I would want to face if I'm Tennessee. This all comes back to, I don't see Tennessee going to the Final Four, and this isn't so much an indictment on Tennessee. It's not even an indictment on second-round Rick, or as I called him in a column this week, I think it's more fair to call him Sweet 16 Rick. Yeah. I think second round Rick is a little bit heavy handed. He's been to eight Sweet 16s in his career. He's Sweet 16 Rick. Me watering down the Vols' chances to get to a Final Four, it doesn't have to do with Tennessee's history. It doesn't have to do with Rick Barnes. It just has to do with the draw and the idea, if chalk holds, of having to go through Texas, Creighton, and Purdue. I don't think they get through that stretch. I don't think it's the right matchups. I would like Tennessee a lot better. I think if they were in the West, I'd probably like them a little bit better if they were in the Midwest. This is probably, nobody wants to face UConn, but aside from the fact that they get to avoid UConn, I don't like anything about this draw from Tennessee. I would want to be really almost in any other region other than the fact that I don't want to face UConn.
Who else do you think, like, we got Auburn about ready to tip out in Spokane. I did love the tournament sending all the Alabama schools out to Spokane.
Strange.
No one took, like, they didn't share the plane. Like, they all took their own charter. I thought that was amazing. But, you know, we got Auburn, we got Alabama a little bit later. We have Florida and A&M. In terms of, you know, because I do think, like, if we're just looking big picture, it's like, it feels like Tennessee and Rick Barnes can really change their narrative if they have a long run. But is there anyone else that you feel like of the remaining teams that can kind of change their lot with this tournament?
Maybe Alabama a little bit. I don't think they're a great candidate for it, but Alabama's kind of fallen into that category the last couple of years of great in the regular season, and then they sort of hit a wall, the Sweet 16 type wall in the postseason, even last year. You know, with the best team that Nate Oates has had. But they don't play any defense, so I see them, you know, unlikely that they go on a huge run. But I remain interested in Auburn, and I was all ready. I was all prepared to put Auburn to the Elite Eight and beyond until the bracket came out on Sunday and they get placed with UConn. I'm like, no, forget that idea. I mean, I almost, you know, for bracket purposes, I almost hated that Auburn won the SEC tournament, because we've talked, you know, in past shows about how, like, winning the SEC tournament it's not necessarily a kiss of death, but like it doesn't really work in your favor historically either. But I thought, you know, I already liked Auburn going into the conference tournament, and then for all the reasons I liked them before, I sort of had that verified to me in the conference tournament. And again, I was all prepared to take them on a deep run. I liked that they got some veterans in Johnny Broome and Jalen Williams who've been through the NCAA tournament before. You know, this is nothing new to them. They play both offense and defense as opposed to a team like Alabama that just plays offense. So, you know, I really like them as a possible Elite Eight Final Four team, but it's like, I think UConn is head and shoulders above the rest of the field. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win it. We know what happens in this tournament. But, you know, I disagree with people that say there's not a dominant number one this year. I think there is. I think UConn's that team, and I would not want to be facing them in the Sweet 16. And so, yeah, anywhere else, I would like stick Auburn in the West or the South. I might like Auburn to the Elite Eight or Final Four. I worry about their possibilities of getting past UConn, but I'm pretty interested to see them against Yale today. Like, I mean, Yale was one of the best teams in the Ivy League. I think they were the 2 seed in that tournament.
Yep.
But, you know, you read some of the people that follow Ivy League basketball, and they say that, you know, they might have actually been the best team in the Ivy League all year. I don't know. Those Ivy League teams can be like, we've seen it before. They can be a little bit of a sneaky thorn in the side in those first round games, sitting on like the 12 or 13 line. So as much as I like Auburn, I'm interested to see how they come out in their opener here.
Well, Tommy Lloyd is thankful that Purdue happened last year, because, you know, Princeton beats them, and because it was on the same day and was actually even before FDU beats Purdue, it's like that is just completely like never discussed in terms of being just an unbelievable 215, like laying an egg, Arizona laying an egg. Like, to me, like, that's a huge part. But you're exactly right on UConn, because I found myself in this spot because those young men cover at an alarming rate. They're also up like 52 to 12 now. But I found myself this week thinking, like, because everybody, it feels like everybody I respect's like, man, UConn is just clearly the best team. And it's like, you see this so often in sports, the team that you expect to be the best team, they're not. And like, then I found myself talking myself into maybe the Big East was just not that good because, you know, Marquette for a while was really struggling with Western Kentucky. You know, Creighton ends up, they both kind of played the same game. Creighton against Akron, like, they were struggling, and then they both pull away late. And so I'm just sitting there wondering. And then you watch 10 minutes of UConn this morning, like, nope, they're that good.
Yeah, and I don't know that, like, the seventh or eighth best team in the Big East is any better than the seventh best team in the Big 12 or the SEC or the Big 10, even in a down year for the Big 10. Like, I'm with you on that.
For the record, I kind of had the same internal dialogue about the SEC. Like, I was like,
right,
was the league that good this year? Like, I was trying to figure it out.
I'm not convinced it was that good, but I guess the difference is, like, I think the Big East was really top heavy.
Yes.
I think UConn is fantastic. Whereas the SEC, Tennessee could be a great team at times. Kentucky had great talent. They weren't often a great team, but they had great talent. But I didn't think the SEC was top heavy. I just thought they were a deep team full of good, not great teams. The Big East, yeah, I don't know if they ran quite as deep in the SEC, but they are more top heavy. I do think UConn is that good. Doesn't mean they're going to win this thing. I mean, I'm with you on that. Like, you could be the best team in this tournament and not win it. You have an off shooting night. You know, calls don't go your way, foul trouble, whatever. It's so much more unpredictable than college football. We know this. But I do think they're legitimately the best team. They got a tough path, though.
Like, yeah, they do.
We talked about Auburn, Illinois. I mean, Terrence Shannon, he gets hot. He could drop 40 on any given night. And
I was like, are they going to lose to Morehead State? And then I looked up like 5 minutes later and they were up like 25. I was like, what happened?
Yeah, they went on an insane run. Terrence Shannon's one of the best scorers, you know, in the sport right now. So they're in a pretty tough region, and Iowa State's sitting there too, which the only reason, you know, they're on that 2 line in UConn's region is because the committee, they wanted to punish them for their non-conference scheduling. It's like, okay, great, you made a nice point, committee.
You just punished your number one team.
Yeah, you just punished UConn by punishing Iowa State. So, yeah, I mean, there wasn't much reward for being your number one overall seed. You get the teams that won the SEC tournament, the Big Ten tournament and the Big 12 tournament in your bracket. But it's a bit of a murderer's row for them. I thought there were clearly two regions that are the toughest, the East, which UConn's number one in, and then Tennessee's region, which is the Midwest, right?
I believe that's correct. They're in Purdue, Midwest.
Yeah, Purdue is the number one. I thought those were the two toughest regions. I thought the two weakest were North Carolina and Houston's regions, and with Kentucky out of the way and Marquette sort of stumbling around, I mean, I feel even better about Houston's chances to get to the Final Four. UConn, North Carolina, I maybe like them the least out of the number one seeds, but I love their region. And I also go back to what I said earlier, like, I like veteran teams in March. And you look at the two stars on North Carolina, R.J. Davis and Armando Bacot. Those guys were starters and key contributors to that national runner-up team 2 years ago as sophomores. Like, that's exactly the type of profile a team I like to make a deep run in March. Like, I think overall they're probably the weakest of the one seeds.
Yeah.
But you look at the ingredients there of two senior guys that have been you know, playing on the championship game stage before. R.J. Davis is smoking hot coming into this tournament. You know, he averages like 22 per game on the season, but lately he's been averaging almost like 30 a game. Yeah, North Carolina could be a dangerous team when you take into account their region as well.
All right, we'll close here. What if you could only watch one game tonight, what when are you singling out?
Oh, man, my mind's blurring. Throw a few at them.
All right, so here are the ones that I'm kind of – I mean, the 8-9 games to me are always just interesting because it's usually kind of similar teams. But I think Wisconsin, JMU, like if a plucky underdog, that's kind of the one that people have. We talked about Auburn and Yale, but like I'm hopeful that Auburn comes out and shows that they're a pretty good team. St. Mary's, so I was a West Coast Conference guy. St. Mary's might be the school that I hate the most.
Because they slow it down, grind, win with defense.
I'm even talking about their students, everything. Like it's this school that has like this institutional arrogance, and you're like, I have no idea where it is founded. Like it's like you are like you're a safety school, and yet they kind of carry themselves in a weird fashion. But Grand Canyon gets up and down, and you know that's a well-paid roster. And then Bama and Charleston.
I think I got my answer. I forgot JMU plays tonight. Yeah. That's a team I watched a couple times this year. They beat, I believe it was Michigan State early in the season.
First game of the year or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I watched them a little bit in the Sun Belt tournament. That was a pretty good conference that only got one bid, but it's kind of a shame they could have got two. App State was a really good team. They can score. I think they got a name, Terrence Edwards, I believe is his name. He averages about 20 a game.
They are not afraid to shoot the three.
No, they are not. I watched them in their Sun Belt championship against Arkansas.
Yeah, Terrence Edwards nailed it, yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder, I think Wisconsin could be a little bit of fool's gold. They got hot in the Big Ten tournament, but I wonder if that takes its toll. I know they're a trendy pick, and the trendy picks never hit, but I do think, like, you win 31 games in a season like James Madison did, and they did have, you know, a few legit teams on the schedule. We mentioned Michigan State. Like, you win that many games, I think you're a dangerous mid-major. So, again, trendy picks never hit. Everybody liked JMU on that 5-12 line, but that's probably the one that I'm most interested in seeing.
All right, buddy, enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the hoops.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, you too.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.